W-E-T-E-N-P-C.
Your night in just got legendary. Get ready to chase the rush, spin, win, and redeem instantly straight to your bank account at legendswithaz.com. With free-to-play slots, blackjack, keno, roulette, and more, experience all the thrills of Vegas without leaving your couch. Legends has it all.
Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Nope. Void where prohibited. Must be 18 plus. Play responsibly. Visit legends.com for full details.
Get in the game now and score a 50% bonus on your first purchase only at legendswithaz.com.
Hello, I'm John Neff, Global Editor-in-Chief of Motor One, and welcome to this week's episode of the MotorOne.com podcast. So the 2020 Chevrolet Corvette finally debuted last week, and it was a new car launch for the ages. Honestly, no one has been able to stop talking about it, including Motor One. We have written so many articles about the Corvette since its introduction that you might as well call us Corvette1.com. On today's episode, we're going to keep the conversation going and give our honest, unvarnished take on the new mid-engine C8 Corvette. Joining me is MotorOne.com managing editor and amateur horologist, Brandon Turkest. How are you doing, Brandon?
I'm well, John. How are you?
Very well. And by horologist, I mean a watch enthusiast, not the other kind. Also with us...
I mean, how do you know?
Good point. Also with us is writer and the man with the most alliterative name I've ever met, Anthony Alanis. How are you doing, Anthony?
I'm doing great, thanks.
So, let's talk Corvette. We actually already had a complete episode about this car two episodes ago leading up to the debut. Now that it's happened, though, honestly, I didn't know if we were going to talk about it this week, but we have not stopped writing about this car. it's probably been more than half of the articles we've published since its debut have been about the Corvette, and they've been extremely popular. People want to know more, want to keep reading about it, want to keep seeing it. The debut was a pretty big fanfare held in a hangar in Southern California. It was live streamed all over the world. Although I don't know, were either of you at the debut of the C7 Corvette a number of years ago?
I was, yeah.
I've heard people say that the C7 debut was actually a little bit like larger and more bombastic than the C8, which I thought is kind of interesting considering how significant the C8 is.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't at the debut for the C8, obviously, but I recall from the C7 that there were a lot of exhibits and a lot more cars. Apparently there were only about three cars for the 1,000 or 1,500 people that were in attendance.
Like three examples of the C8?
Of the C8, yeah. And I don't recall that being a problem
like
when
they had
the C7 launched.
Yeah, like they had a lot more just cars on the floor
for people to check out. Yeah, and I also wouldn't be surprised if they had fewer people too. It didn't feel like a 1,000-person affair, but that was 6 years ago now, and I've gone to a lot of auto shows since then, so my memory is a little bit fuzzy.
I've been trying to tell people that there's only a few cars that can have this bigger of a debut, this large of a significance, particularly in the U.S. It's Mustang and Corvette probably are the two biggest. Whenever we have a new Mustang or a new Corvette, it's the biggest. It's the biggest thing happening that you can imagine. But yeah,
Wrangler.
I would still put Mustang and Corvette ahead of Wrangler, but especially because Wrangler never changes too much. But the others, when they have full generational changes, you know, a Mustang can get pretty different. But, you know, imagine this happens once in a lifetime when the car goes from front engine to mid engine. I mean, imagine if the Mustang suddenly went mid engine. That would be crazy. And yet, this is what happened with the Corvette. So this is honestly a once in a generation kind of car debut. And so now that the car's out, one thing that was immediately apparent as soon as the car appeared on stage was the spy shots, the renderings were all about 100% accurate. Like the car that Chevy had driving around in camouflage was not camouflaged very well. And what we saw is pretty much what we got. So I want to go around the table and get everybody's opinion first on the styling. So Anthony, why don't I start with you? How did the styling of the C8 hit you?
I like it. It's a lot better than I thought it would be. I don't know if the camouflage on all the prototypes and test mules that we saw probably did hide a lot of the design lines and more, I guess, finer details of the car. But I think it looks great.
How about you, Brandon? How did it hit you?
I mean, there are definitely angles where it looks better. I definitely see it from certain angles, especially the profile. The proportions look a little bit ungainly. I don't like some of the smaller details either. It's a mid-engine shape I've always found works really well if you either go kind of rounded and organic or go really crazy and angular. And the C8 kind of tries to play both sides, and it doesn't do it that well, I don't think.
That's a really good observation. I kind of see that with the Acura NSX. I kind of have the same opinion of it like that. And I think actually there's some proportional elements of the C8 that remind me of the NSX.
Sure, absolutely. And I've heard people make that comparison that it looks like the NSX. I don't really see that. There are proportions that are similar, but they're similar because they're inherent to all mid-engine cars. So
I kind of disagree with that because I think actually mid-engine cars can be a lot different from each other in especially when you, like you mentioned, when you look at them in kind of profile. And I think the NSX and the Corvette kind of share some of these just broad stroke silhouette elements, maybe. Whereas if you look at like another mid-engine car, like a Hurricane or something, like it's completely different. It's like a wedge, a pure wedge. And so I think there can be like a mid-engine design can be pretty varied depending on how you do it. But I take your point that you can either go like organic and smooth or wild. But if you don't do one of those and you end up in the middle, it's this kind of weird zone that I think the Corvette and the NSX live.
And this Corvette is notable because I've always found that in the past, when you remove the roof of the Corvette coupe with, you know, the T-tops, for lack of a better word, you take the T-tops out, it always improves the look. And that isn't really the case here. I haven't seen a single angle with the roof panel removed that I actually like.
Oh, that's interesting. I think it looks pretty good with the roof removed. I think it looks pretty good with it on and off, or it doesn't make it better or worse. At first, when I saw it, I'm like, this is positive. I like this. You know, my first impression was good. Then I started hearing from some people actually in the design community, and whether they be car designers or artists or, you know, just in that kind of genre. And they actually are very critical of it, respectfully so, because they know how difficult it is to design a car like this, such an iconic car, and to do it within a company as bureaucratic as GM. So that is no small feat just to get a halfway decent design out the door. I think my least favorite part of the design is the rear end. It's very busy. I don't perceive very many ties to traditional Corvette design in the rear end at all. There's a lot of angles going on. I like the kind of blade it has over the air intakes on either side, kind of at the rear edge of the doors. It's a little bit reminiscent of like the blade on the Audi R8, right? It's kind of
I don't see that at all.
I only mean I don't think it looks like the blade on the Audi R8, but I think it's like a little design signature.
My issue with that is that it's, when you look at the rest of the car and the more rounded nature, and especially immediately around that detail, that stands out as being this angular, sharp thing. And so when I've been playing it with the Corvette configurator, every single car I design has that side blade as body color.
Oh, interesting.
Because it just looks so out of place to me.
But see, that's interesting that you describe the car. I guess that the car is, it's kind of like half organic lines, half smooth lines, and half angular. Like, it really, depending on what area of the car you're looking at, you're either seeing angles or you're either seeing smooth lines. So it's really strange that way. One thing I found interesting is Ferrari Chat is a sister site to Motor One, and it's the largest Ferrari forum in the world. So obviously there was a lot of conversation about the Corvette, the mid-engine Corvette there when it debuted. And a couple things they were talking about is, one, it looks like a poor man's Ferrari, which it does a little bit. I can't deny that it, like, if you squint, it kind of looks like, you know, an F430 from a while
ago
or something.
Do we really think that Ferrari owners, Ferrari enthusiasts, loyalists, people that you know, love their Ferraris, were ever going to say anything different about a mid-engine Corvette?
Well, so the other interesting thing that they were saying, though, was that they were curious to know if the introduction of the Corvette would crash the used market for mid-engine Ferraris. So if a young person coming up who was a Ferrari enthusiast, let's say, if they had their choice between a used mid-engine Ferrari for like $100,000+ or a mid-engine Corvette for under $100,000 that was, you know, brand new with a warranty and had better performance, would that kind of soften the market for mid-engine Ferraris that a lot of these guys in the forum own?
I think that's that will be entirely dependent on how much it costs to maintain the Corvette.
Well, that's a good question.
Because mid-engine cars are hard to maintain, and Ferraris are notoriously expensive to maintain.
Yeah, so, we're very far out though on any type of like data on.
Oh, totally.
On what it'll cost to maintain a Corvette, and more particularly, like how difficult it is to work on, because no mechanics have gotten their hands on it. So yeah, in terms of the styling, I'm kind of in the middle. I can see very plainly that it was a kind of design by committee affair. Like I can see where a lot of decisions were made that weren't connected to each other. A lot of, you know, an executive raises an eyebrow and that line gets drawn this way instead of that way. But
John, that's absolutely crazy. I've never heard of that happening with a GM product ever.
Well, yeah, especially with a GM product. But all that said, I don't think the end result is ugly. I genuinely think it's an attractive vehicle. You know, there's certainly ways I could spec it to where I would like it. I would probably have the contrast in color on the Blade because I'm a fan of the Blade. Do they have a name for it? Because it's not the Blade. So I don't know if they.
I don't think they have.
They should coin a name for it. That's like part of the.
Don't give them any ideas.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's talk about specs and performance, because that's another thing that really blew the roof off the debut was the fact that they announced that it'll be powered by a new version of the 6.2 liter V8. Obviously, this car is not going, you know, twin turbo V6 or anything like that. It's sticking to its tried and true recipe of naturally aspirated V8. And at least with the Z51 performance package, it'll make 495 horsepower, which is a considerable amount. And I think 0 to 60 below 3 seconds with the Z51 package. Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
All right. So how does that strike you, Anthony? Is that more than enough? Or let me ask you this, is it too much? Did they raise the bar too high with the base Corvette and now they've got to beat it with, you know, whatever they come up with next, you know, Z06 if it's going to be that, ZR1, whatever?
Possibly. I mean, it's definitely a lot of power, and if the price stays where it is, under allegedly $60,000, but we don't know by how much. You know, I kind of thought if it's so cheap and with so much power, will that be like the new Mustang thing where people are getting the car when they don't have the experience with the horsepower and causing those sorts of issues, especially with the whole taking the engine from the front to the rear. If somebody's been driving a Corvette for a while and decides to upgrade, you know, what issues can that cause? But I think it's plenty of power.
You know, it's so interesting. I hadn't thought of that, but... You know, you mentioned the Mustang, and you go back thinking about the GT500 Mustang from a few generations ago when it got up to like 500 horsepower. And I don't know if it was the case that it was just before electronic nannies and stability control got really, really good, but I remember that car was dangerous. That car,
well,
like...
That was a solid rear axle, too. I mean...
That's true.
It's not a good combination. I can't think of a clever analogy on the spot.
It wasn't. But, I mean, Anthony's point about switching from front engine to mid engine, I mean, it's not that mid engine cars are inherently like more dangerous in terms of handling, but they're very different. So if you put a bunch of guys who've been used to, you know, driving their C7 Corvettes fast on public roads, and you throw them in one of these Corvettes, I mean, it's quite possible we could see a lot of people with some insurance claims from wrapping their new Corvettes around a tree. That said, you know, this could be a case like, you know, you take the Dodge Challenger Hellcat, and there's just, you know, there's so many electronic nannies that you have to turn off before you unleash the full thing that most people are never driving it totally unleashed. So it could be a case where, you know, they make it at least you have to go through a few hoops to fully unleash the car, and then that kind of, you know, makes sure that people are reined in and protected from themselves a little bit. That'll be interesting. I'll be interested, you know, when we go on the first drive to see if that's the case, or if they just have one button on the dash, like the Z button that's on the steering wheel, where you just like click that and it turns everything off and you're completely unleashed. Then if that's the case, I think that could be pretty dangerous. But what about you, Brandon? Do you think the power is enough, too much, just right?
Well, no, I think the power is fine. I think the problem is, and I've had this conversation a lot since the Corvette debuted. A couple weeks ago, I drove the McLaren 720S Spyder. That's a car with over 700 horsepower that'll get to 60 in 2.8 seconds. And I took a lot of my friends and my family for a ride, and all of them remarked on how it just takes your breath away. It is a different level of performance than anything you've ever dealt with before. And when you put people that aren't ready for that kind of performance, someone that's owned a C7 that, you know, would get to 60 in 3.9 or 4 seconds or 4.1 seconds, or even a C6 or C5 owner, and they jump up to a car that can go that fast, it worries me, because unless your perception of speed has adjusted to that, you're going to be in a situation where you stand on the pedal and you get all this power and all this speed, and your mind isn't going to be able to process what is coming towards you, if it's the right time to do this, if the road is smooth enough, if there's a pothole coming up. I disagree with you, John. Mid-engine cars are inherently more difficult to drive for inexperienced drivers.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I think that's fair to say.
It's not even a level of familiarity. It's that, you know, you have a whole different set of physics at work than you do in a front-engine V8 than you do in a mid-engine car. So even if there is, you know, a perfect 50-50 weight distribution and all this other good stuff going on, I'm definitely concerned that this is going to be too much car for a lot of consumers that are considering it.
Well, I think that comes down to, again, how good are the nannies and how easy or difficult are they to turn off, and are they going to offer a driving school? I doubt it'll come with.
And
the price.
They absolutely should offer a driving school.
And a lot of vehicles, a lot of companies do. Ford has one for its STs and Mustangs. BMW has a driving school, so it's a very good idea, especially for these cars that do come with so much power that is so accessible. So I want to move on to, I think, the one thing about the Corvette that probably made everyone in the room and online gasp when it was announced. The price is going to be, the starting price is going to be below $60,000. That's what GM and Chevy said. So they didn't give any other details about price. Now I want to give my opinion on this first, and then I'll get your reaction. So for one, I don't think anybody like, I think it's going to be like most cars where they do have a version of the car for the base price, but dealerships aren't going to carry that car. It's going to be very difficult to get that car for $60,000. As a matter of fact, all of the performance numbers that we're getting excited about are for the Corvette with the Z51 package. We don't know how much the Z51 package is going to cost, but you know, it's definitely going to bring the car above $60,000. So we have no idea how much this Stingray Corvette could go up to. You know, can it go up to $80,000? Could it go up to $100,000? When you load it up, I don't know. So I think, you know, yes, it's a great advertising line, and it worked for them to announce that it would start under 60. But I feel like very few people, if any, are going to buy a sub $60,000 Corvette. That said, putting that number $60,000 into some context, somebody said to me, or no, I read on Facebook yesterday, if a fully loaded Toyota Supra with 335 horsepower is $5,000 less than the base price of a new Stingray Corvette. And that to me is kind of mind-boggling. because they are cars in two completely different classes, and to have their prices be anywhere near each other, even if it's the lowest price of one and the highest price of the other, is crazy. This, I mean, the amount of power you're getting for the money here, the bang for the buck, might be one of the best of all time. And yes, that does come with some of the concerns that we've already mentioned about people who don't have the experience getting access to that much power. But man, I mean, you know, I think we've always applauded, you know, automakers that price things where we feel like, you know, it's a good value and we're not being gouged. And I think this is just an incredible. As a matter of fact, I'm on record in the last couple episodes saying that I thought the starting price would be $80,000, and I could not have been more wrong. It is. They have completely redefined, I think, what performance value means, and I'm just really excited to actually get an honest to goodness configurator with prices, so that we can see exactly, you know, exactly how expensive the Corvette you really want is going to be. Because, like I said, I doubt it's going to be $60,000. What do you guys think, Brandon? I mean, is it amazing? Is it the best performance bargain that we've ever seen, or is it kind of a smoke show?
I mean, sure, it's a fantastic performance bargain if you can find one. It's the $60,000 C8 Corvette is going to be like that 70-inch OLED TV that's on, you know, the doorbuster on Black Friday. You're never going to find it. They can advertise it all day long until they're blue in the face. That car does not exist.
Now, wait, if they're never going to have it on the dealer lot, and they're going
to if GM allows owners to go in and order it, then yeah, it's probably a pretty good bargain.
Which I don't think they will. I think they'll just build all they can and send them to dealer lots, and you can buy.
Nah, see, I really disagree with that. I get the impression that the Corvette is one of those cars that people order, custom order pretty frequently. You think about the programs that they've had in the past, the Build Your Own Engine program, and the special touches. So I definitely think there's going to be a fair percentage of consumers that will custom order, and they may try and take advantage and say, I want the cheapest Corvette. I want the biggest bang for my buck. That said, I think that your $80,000 estimate is much more correct as like a real world base price. Like what you're going to see, it's like $75,000 to $80,000 Corvettes, I think, will be thick on the ground at dealer lots when they finally start arriving.
Yeah. How about you, Anthony? How does the price sound to you? You going to replace your Mustang with it?
No, probably not. I think the price, like the $60,000, like is a good marketing campaign. However, I don't think you'll want to drive that car. I think you'll want the Z51 package. I think you'll want, you know, maybe some color on the interior. You know, I don't think we've seen an actual Corvette under that price. I think we've all seen them spec'd pretty high, you know, from GM. But I think you'll want to spend at least $75,000 on one.
Yeah, we don't even know like what the base Corvette will come with, right? So we don't even know if it'll be like, I mean, it'll be livable, but will it have enough of what people want to, or will you basically be forced to start adding options right from the get-go?
I mean, GM's product strategy in the past has very much favored hiding the best goodies in the option sheet.
Oh, completely.
So I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, the base car comes out with like an analog gauge cluster and manual seats and all sorts of other little penny pinching options that allow it to get that price.
You know, we published right after it debuted a comparison between the Corvette and its kind of its new and old class of competitors. And it is astonishing the difference between the base price of the new Corvette, you know, which is somewhere south of $60,000, and the base price of all of these competitors. If you take Acura NSX, base price $160,000, that's insane. Its base price is $100,000 more than a C8 Corvette, an Audi R8. $171,000. Now, both of those cars actually have more horsepower than the Corvette Stingray, but they're not actually like that much faster. You know, like You know, the Acura NSX gets to 60 in 2.9 seconds, and we know the Corvette's going to do it below 3 seconds. So the difference in performance is not that great. Certainly not great enough to justify over $100,000. And even the longtime foe of the Corvette, the 911 Carrera, a 911 Carrera S base price is $115,000. Like, this is insane, the difference between the base price of the Corvette and the competition out there. Like, literally nothing starts below $100,000. So already it has $40,000 on any of those cars. So basically you could say you have $40,000 to, you know, get whatever options you want, because you're still going to be way below the next competitor.
And you not only have money for options, but for aftermarket too, whatever that turns out to be. That's a lot of money to definitely increase that horsepower by quite a bit.
Yeah, I'm sure there's going to be a huge aftermarket. As a matter of fact, I like, you know, the Corvette has always had a lot of different either tuners out there or third-party companies that make special edition Vets. You know, I can't wait to see some of those come out. I don't even know which ones are. Is Callaway still in business? Because I used to love the Callaway Corvettes in the 90s.
Oh, no.
I don't even know. Didn't they have a sledgehammer or something like that?
I don't know. All I remember is that they made those, turn those terrible C5s into like C1 retro monstrosities.
No, they did some other cool stuff. I remember Motor Trend used to like have a battle of the tuners that they would always participate in, and they had some pretty cool cars. So I don't know what the next step is for the Vette. Obviously, we're still talking about any Corvette information that comes out. But you know, I feel like there's still a lot more to go. We still need more specific pricing information. They don't even know the top speed of the car. We wrote about that the other day. They just haven't tested what its top speed is. They have no idea.
So one of the things that I think, and this is pure speculation, I think they are sacrificing top speed to get that 0-60 number. I think this thing is geared so much for acceleration. If you look at cars that can get to 60 in under 3 seconds, most of them can do, you know, 200 miles an hour easily. This is not a 200 mile an hour car.
I would say 190. I'm looking at actually the competitor thing, and most are like high 180s or 190s.
I would bet this car is tops out at 170, 175.
Maybe, although, you know, nowadays with an 8-speed transmission, it's got an 8-speed, you know, dual clutch. With 8 gears, it might have a large enough spread to, you know, get a top speed that inches towards.
Yeah, but with only 500 horsepower. It's got to be super light. It'd have to be super light.
Yeah, I generally think you're right. It's definitely not going to break 200. I think I'll be surprised if it breaks 190. I think low 180s, high 170s is probably what we should expect. And again, we don't know what the next models will be called. We don't know if they'll be Z06. I think somebody told me ZR1. Reusing ZR1 is very unlikely. They might bring back the Zora name or something like that. But we have versions of the Corvette coming that will surely break 200 miles an hour easily. You know, this one's 495 horsepower, and we're pretty sure we have 600 and 800 horsepower versions coming as well. Also, they've not been very good at keeping or at denying the fact that at least partial electrification will probably come, much like the Acura NSX uses, you know, the internal combustion engine on the rear wheels and some electric motors on the front wheels to create a kind of through the road all-wheel drive system. So it sounds like that's coming to the Corvette as well, to make the most capable, highest performing version, whatever that's called. I'm actually pretty excited to see it race too. I want to see it at Le Mans, you know, mixing it up with the Ferraris and the Porsches and the 4 GTs as well. I'm a little sad that we don't have the most capable version of the new Corvette to go against the 4GT. I feel like those are going to be two ships kind of passing in the night.
Oh, I'm sure someone will.
Yeah, I just think the 4GT's run will be over by the time the you know, whatever that is called comes around.
I don't know. I mean, there's the allocation for GTs, there's still a fair amount to do.
Didn't they announce, though, the one at Goodwood at the debut, the Mark II, is going to be the last one?
No, that's the last racing variant.
Oh,
that's a track variant. Only. They're still building road cars.
All right. Well, maybe Ford will keep building them until people don't want to buy them.
Well, I think they've got an allocation. I think they haven't fulfilled it yet, and they have a production schedule. And yeah.
All right. Well, we would love to hear what you all think about the Corvette. As we said, we're not done talking about it, and we probably won't be for many weeks and months. So you can find us on Facebook and Twitter at MotorOneCom, and of course on our website MotorOne.com, where you can find us in the comments. And we're coming up, we're going to talk about what we've been driving this week in our favorite segment of the show. But before that, a reminder that if you are listening to the episode online, you can also get our show on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, and wherever you like to listen to your podcasts. So we'd hope that you'd subscribe so that you can get every week's new episode as soon as it's ready. Welcome back. During this part of the show, we talk about what cars we're driving this week, and today we're going to start with Anthony. So, Anthony, what car are you driving this week?
I have a 2013 Ford Mustang.
2013.
Yep.
Interesting. Is it a, what is it, a GT base model?
No, it's a V6 with a stick.
V6 with a stick. Awesome. Yep. How long have you had it?
7 years.
Wow. How many miles?
105,000.
All right. How's it hanging on? Like a 100,000 plus mile Mustang, I'm sure you've had a few things you've had to replace.
Actually, it's been great. I just now have my first like real suspension squeak driving over Michigan roads. So other than that, I've had very few issues other than the killer airbags that I had to get replaced. But it's been a wonderful experience, good gas mileage, fun to drive. I mean...
Are you driving that through the winter too?
Yep.
I was gonna say, do you swap the tires out for winter tires or?
Nope, I always keep all seasons. They seem to do fine. I've never had any trouble, and that's even when I worked in Detroit or Ann Arbor, which is about an hour drive. I've never had any trouble. So
impressive.
It's been great. I love it. So.
All right. Well, Brandon, I think you have something pretty excited this week. What are you driving?
Yes, I am driving the Audi RS5 Sportback.
Ah, the RS5 Sportback. So this is what, the four-door coupe version of the the A5, but the RS version.
Well, it's more of a liftback, and I like liftbacks. I wish more car companies would do liftbacks because they're such a good, useful body style. But yes, this is the RS5 and it's got four doors. That's really its distinguishing feature from the coupe body style. This car is quite potent. It has a 3-liter twin turbocharged V6. And because I'm bad at my job, I didn't look up the horsepower before I came on the call.
I'm looking at it right now. It's 444.
444 horsepower. This car, I've had a lot of friends around the industry drive this exact model. Actually, it's kind of been the village bicycle here in Detroit, and the remarks have all kind of followed a similar theme that, you know, it's not as fun, it's not as exciting as the last RS5, and I don't really agree with that. I think this car is. It suffers from the same problem that the BMW M3 suffered from when it went from a V8 to a straight six, in that the straight six in that car and the V6 in this car both replaced what were some of the most widely beloved V8 engines on the market. The 4.2 liter V8 in the last RS5 and the previous RS4 was one of the best V8s of the past 20 years. Bar none, it was fantastic. They used it in the R8. It was a fantastic engine. And there was no possible way that this V6 was going to fill those shoes. It's getting accused of not having as much character and not being as likable.
Well, and
I don't really agree with that. It's different. That doesn't make it worse.
It's funny because that 4.2 liter V8 engine that was in the last RS5, I had a love affair with. I loved that engine, specifically in that car. So
yeah, it was fantastic.
And I have driven this RS5 Sportback as well, and I kind of had the same reaction to it, where I felt like it lacked either the soul or the passion or whatever.
So here's really where I see the problem is one of the defining traits of that 4.2 was that you could just rev the nuts off of it. I mean, it revved, I want to say, up around 8,000 RPM. It felt like this purebred stallion of an engine. And this engine tops out at about 6,300, 6,400 RPM. You look at the torque spread on the 4.2 versus this. The 4.2 didn't have a lot of torque, and you really had to work. You had to be smart about how you drove it to get the most out of it. This engine is much more effortless. It's you get in the car, and you hit the pedal, and it goes fast. So it's not as demanding of a vehicle to drive as the old RS5 was and the RS4 and so on.
I think the issue is that makes it less engaging in a way because it is so automatic and so point and shoot. As a matter of fact, it's got great power. It's 0 to 60 in 3.8 seconds, so it's not slower than the old RS5. But like you said, the old RS5, it was a while ago. I mean, it was more than a few model years ago. And it was just that, you're right, you did have to engage with it more to get everything out of it. And I think it felt a little more fun that way. Whereas this, you get in and it's by default, it's in comfort mode and you're just driving it around like a normal car. And so I think that's the issue. It's just kind of like its liveliness is either not as accessible or just buried a little bit deeper.
So that said, that, you know, we're sitting here, we're saying this, and we each drive literally hundreds of new cars each year. And it's the same with a lot of our colleagues that have made similar arguments. And I don't think this is one of those cases where I think we do a poor job of putting ourselves in the shoes of the customer that walks in and is going to go for a test drive in that car and stand on the throttle and be like, holy moly, I get 60 in 3.8 seconds. Where do I sign? You know, I think this car is the right thing for the market, for the customers that are interested in it. The ones that really want that 4.2 V8, they obviously have the money to go and get a used RS5 or a used RS4 or even a used R8. So, and they can get it with a manual too. I think, well, you can get the RS4 with a manual and the R8. I don't remember about the RS5. But the customers that are looking at this car, they're not gonna have any, most likely they're not gonna have a reference point to say that the 4.2 was great and this 3-liter isn't as good because X, Y, and Z.
Right, and the old RS5, it wasn't. It's not like the Corvette where there's a legion of people, you know, who are waiting for the next one to live up to the old one. You know,
precisely.
So I think them changing kind of the personality of the RS5 is totally fine. And you're right, they changed it to go, I think, with the market, and not kind of keep a more maybe emotional, more analog machine. They just made it another really great Audi, which is what Audi does. I mean, Audi just pumps out really good cars.
And
maybe they're not always best in class, but they're always like top of the game, top of the segment.
I will say the one thing that I'm absolutely madly in love with this car is how it looks. It is so darn handsome. It's the one I'm driving is bright red. It has a blacked out grille, it has blacked out belt line, huge 21 inch wheels with tiny little sidewalls, smoked taillights. It looks absolutely fantastic. Like every time I walk outside, I just kind of look at it and just, it's like a slack-jawed stare. And there are very few cars now that do that to me, but this one is so pretty.
Yeah, as much as I like to kind of get annoyed with automakers that are turning every coupe into a, you know, like a every two-door into a four-door coupe, I gotta say, some of them look damn pretty. Like, some of them look so good, I wonder, like, why do you even make the sedan version?
That's the thing. If the thing you care about is how good your car looks, if you're in that class, ignore Mercedes, definitely ignore BMW. This is such a stunning car. I'd say it's almost better looking than the Giulia, and I love the Giulia.
All right, so this week I am, I'm actually traveling, and I'm at our company headquarters in Miami, where there's like a whole slew of vehicles to drive, and the one I got for the few days I'm down here is the Chevy Blazer, which I've driven before, and I reviewed actually for the site, and I'm a fan of, and as a matter of fact, this one I'm driving now is kind of the more pimped out version. I think the one I reviewed was more of, I think, what a normal family person would buy. This one is a really poppy red with black wheels. Like, it's trimmed to look, you know, to stand out. it's not the old Blazer. It's not a true SUV. It can't go off road, and it is not, you know, rough and tumble, you know, an adventure vehicle. It has this kind of Camaro inspired design that I think looks better than the current Camaro. Like, I would rather be seen driving
that bar is not high, though.
That's true. But nevertheless, I think it's one of the best looking two-row midsize crossovers. I think it looks fantastic. I do love the subtle callbacks, design cues that they take from the Camaro, both in the interior and the exterior. Although it's funny because I think the exterior design elements they're taking from the Camaro aren't from the current Camaro. They're from like the Camaro a generation or two ago when it still looked good. What I would love to see for this vehicle is just more. Like, give me a version of the Blazer to combat the Ford Edge ST with some serious horsepower. I even had fun a while back and have our renderist make a GMC version of the Blazer so that we could imagine what a new GMC Typhoon would be if it were based on the Blazer. So yeah, I think it's a great vehicle, and I've been enjoying it. I honestly, though, as much as I like it, I'm not really a fan of the segment itself of midsize SUVs, because if I were at a dealership and they had a full gamut of all SUV classes, if I looked at the midsize SUV, I'd probably ask myself, can I really get away with getting a compact SUV for a lot less money that is pretty much almost the same size? Or if I really need the space, why don't I just go to a three-row SUV instead of a two-row midsize? So, to me, I would easily talk myself out of ever buying a midsize crossover SUV like the Blazer, because I'd probably go either above or below that segment. But for those who buy in that segment, and it has exploded in the last like two model years, I really like it as an option. All right, so that brings us to the end of our show. You can follow Brandon Turkus on Twitter at Brandon Turkus. Anthony, you can find on Twitter at Anthony_Alaniz. That's A-L-A-N-I-Z. And you can find me at John_M_Neff. I want to thank you two for joining me on the show today.
Thanks, John.
Yeah, thanks. It was great.
Yep. And of course, thank all of you out there for listening. We'll see you next week.
Legends, the greatest social casino experience has arrived at Legends.com. With thousands of the best free-to-play casino-style games, chances to earn millions of bonus coins and win real money. Legends is revolutionizing the Vegas experience wherever you are. If you love winning, then you'll love playing at Legends.com. Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Visit Legends.com for more information. Legends with a Z.com is legendary fun.